Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The Dunleavy administration is considering a new Juneau ferry terminal 30 miles north of the existing one to accommodate the short range of the new Alaska-class ferries. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, it's part of the plan to ensure day boats can connect Juneau with Haines and Skagway.
The Alaska-class ferry Taslina is expected to take its maiden voyage next month. It'll be a day run between Juneau's Auk Bay Terminal and Haines and Skagway. Because it has no rest areas for crew, Coast Guard regulations require the day boat complete its round-trip run within 12 hours. But a March 27th Department of Transportation memo, released Friday to Coast Alaska through a public records request, says the Taslina won't be able to make its connections within the 12-hour window. Governor Bill Walker's administration had unveiled 11th-hour plans to add crew quarters to the Alaska-class ferries late last year, but the incoming Dunleavy administration scuttled the $27 million idea. That magic number reappears in this new plan, except the money would go toward a new seasonal ferry terminal further north to keep the short-run ferries viable. The memo says the $27 million project at Cascade Point would erase nearly half of the 4.5-hour trip to Haines. DOT's regional spokeswoman, Ora Landau.
The department is analyzing the engineering and operation and costs of a potential project, and as of this time, a decision hasn't been made about the project.
The 8-page memo includes a design plan plus a cost breakdown for road improvements required. Cascade Point is near Echo Cove at the north end of Juneau's road system. It's on land owned by Gold Belt Incorporated, a native corporation that operates a commuter ferry for workers at the Kensington Mine across the bay. Southeast lawmakers say they haven't been briefed, though others have.
All we know is rumors and things that are being presented at private groups in the community.
Representative Sarah Hannon is a Democrat representing Haines, Skagway, and downtown Juneau.
My understanding is that the Alaska Miners Association Juneau chapter had a presentation that included information about a new ferry terminal at Cascade Point. But the committees on transportation haven't seen or had any formal communications about it.
In a letter to Coast Alaska accompanying the document's release, a deputy commissioner wrote that the agency has the authority to begin the project as part of the legislature's appropriations for the now stalled road project called Juneau Access. The memo does not reference the Dunleavy administration's proposed budget that would shut down state ferry service in October, or the $250,000 contract for a private firm to study the Alaska Marine Highway System's future. But that controversial contract has yet to be awarded. It's been held up after the losing consultancy firm lodged a formal protest with DOT, alleging the procurement process was unfair and arbitrary. Details of the Cascade Point ferry terminal plan first appeared earlier this month in an unsourced report on Must Read Alaska, a conservative blog written by a former spokeswoman for the Alaska Republican Party. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Harborview Elementary School will lose one teacher position next school year. That's because the Juneau School District is predicting a small drop in enrollment. Principal Tom McKenna says this is a continuation of a trend. Last year, with fewer students to serve, the school reduced its teaching staff from 12 to 10. McKenna says the school will make things work next school year with 9 teachers.
But the impact is, I think, more intense as we get smaller. So a shift in staffing, if you're a large school, you can absorb that shift in more ways than you can if you're a small school.
For Harborview, that shift will likely mean more combined grade classrooms and class sizes of up to 30 students, or even higher for some grades. The district allocates teachers to each school based on an ideal student-to-teacher ratio set by the city and borough of Juneau. McKenna says the city has worked hard to keep that ratio low, but it has crept up under budget pressure.
If you look over 10 years, we've been put under strain by even those small increases. So we're small enough now that we're really vulnerable because of the cumulative budget picture.
If more students than expected show up at Harborview in August, there's a chance the district would then add another teacher. That's what happened this school year, but McKenna says it was a scramble. The Friday before school started, they still weren't sure how many teachers they would have. For now, McKenna says the school is preparing for both scenarios, drawing up multiple schedules and class configurations.
Teachers would ideally love to spend the summer prepping, knowing what they're teaching, but we have to do everything with the contingency that we might get that better allocation.
McKenna says it's a huge help when families register their kids well in advance of the next school year. He especially encourages parents of incoming kindergartners to contact their elementary school and enroll now for the fall. A lot of search and rescue situations in Alaska involve someone missing or injured in the wilderness. But in the case of an earthquake or avalanche, first responders need to be equally prepared to search for or treat someone in a collapsed building. An exercise last week in Juneau provided that training for emergency workers from around the state. And they learned from a Washington group that has unique expertise and experience in responding to these kinds of disasters. KTO's Matt Miller has the story.
Iola Young has rolled out an air mattress and a sleeping bag next to a large shipping container. She's brought a good book.
And breakfast and lunch, and they provided me with earplugs and safety glasses, and I'm set.
She and a naked dummy are role-playing victims of a building collapse.
My friend here is unconscious, and he is slowly dying.
Do you have any
And needs help.
Oh, okay.
Just needs help, that's all I know.
There are actually three shipping containers arranged to represent the ceiling and a few walls of the damaged building that Young is trapped in, like an open-sided giant dollhouse without any furniture. But rescuers have discovered the building's entrance is damaged. Before they can safely enter, they need to fabricate wood shoring on the spot. The exercise is part of urban search and rescue training. First responders from around the state are learning how to locate and treat victims in an urban environment that's been wrecked by a massive earthquake, a mudslide like the one that killed three people in Sitka in 2015, or a major avalanche. The teachers of the course have unfortunate expertise in the subject. They responded to the 2014 Oso mudslide in Washington State that killed 43 people and destroyed dozens of homes. It was the single deadliest mudslide in U.S. history.
If you could imagine if somebody just took a bunch of mud and trees and houses and put them in a blender, then dumped it out on the ground, that's really what it was like. There was hardly any structure left. The houses were pancaked.
Master Sergeant Chris Martin is with the Washington National Guard. His team specializes in searching confined spaces in collapsed buildings or wide area searches like what they did at Oso.
We drove across the state to the collapse site. We worked on the pile for 10 days straight. By that time, it was a recovery operation, and we were helping extract remains from the slide.
Even though he's based in Washington, Martin says his team could be asked to help if a disaster happened in Alaska, working alongside local responders. Searching for people inside collapsed buildings is different from searching for people lost in the woods. It requires different tools and different skills, even for dogs.
In a building, your scent is all over the place. It's spilling out. Oh, yes, you are. Okay.
Jeff Larson and his dog Tango are practicing looking for victims in a dark building. Larson says outdoors, the wind may carry the scent in an ever-widening path shaped like a cone. But inside,
your scent is probably going to go up from you, because you're 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah. It's going to go up, hit the ceiling, and on a cold wall, it'll sink, or it might go up across the room, and the dog will come in. In a building, it's totally different than out in the wilderness.
There are also hazards in damaged buildings that the dogs aren't used to outside, things like hazardous materials, additional structural collapses, or gas leaks, or live electrical wires. Iola Young ends up hanging out in her sleeping bag next to the simulated building collapse for several hours. Rescuers are drilling and jackhammering their way through a 6-inch thick reinforced concrete slab that's in their way. It's grueling, time-consuming work. In addition to practicing using power tools to extract victims from the building, the first responders also practice talking to victims, getting important information about their health and situation, and keeping them calm.
That was KTO's Matt Miller reporting. Finally, the Douglas Bridge will be fully closed for up to 15 minutes at a time between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. from Tuesday through Friday next week. State Department of Transportation says the closure is to let survey crews gather data for bridge repairs. The surveys require minimal bridge vibration.